Welcome to Human Rights in a Burning World. Today, we're talking to Stephanie Brendel, founder of Shark Allies, about the worldwide and statewide campaigns to ban the trade of shark fins. Now, you might be thinking, wait a minute, this series is called Human Rights in a Burning World, not Sharks Under Siege or something like that. But our partner in this podcast, Regina Paulos, had the idea of putting Stephanie and the shark fin controversy on the podcast, and Regina couldn't have been more right. First, humans have the right to a sustained and healthy environment. Humans and our planet are inseparable. We're part of nature. But there's more. What the shark fin struggle illustrates is all of the factors complicating the creation of laws that can truly protect humans and the planet. Stephanie's story is the story of international and domestic law in an unstable and insecure world. She points out that the biggest challenge with international agreements is that they are unenforceable and not universal. Even when they are enforceable, such enforcement happens in a very delayed time frame. This also speaks to the difficulty of enforcing laws in a complex environment. The story of shark fins being untraceable, for example, which Stephanie will talk about, is a good metaphor for law enforcement in general, especially law enforcement in an international context. Stephanie also talks about resistance to shark fin bans by independent fishing businesses and food establishments. This is illustrative of how private interests, and not always just wealthy interests, so often feel invested in unjust and unsustainable systems. And finally, Stephanie's perspective lays out the self-executing nature of international agreements, such as those on the environment. Nations always have to put domestic laws into place in order to enforce agreed-upon international standards.
My name is Stephanie Brendel. I am executive director and founder of Shark Allies, a nonprofit organization for the conservation of sharks and the oceans they live in. Shark Allies is based in California right now, but before I started it in Hawaii. But the work is done sort of all over the place, so it's not really necessarily California centric. Mm-hmm. So now I'm here in Florida, going back and forth to work on a campaign to end the trade of shark fins in Florida. Shark Allies, I started it in 2007. I actually was the owner and operator of a shark diving company in Hawaii that I had with my partner Jimmy Hall for about 10 to 12 years. Approximately. While we were out taking people shark diving every single day, we realized that there was a big opportunity to do a lot of education. And we also ourselves, we got a lot more educated about the issues. What started simply as a passion for diving and wanting to be in the water with sharks and taking pictures of them and filming them turned more and more into a life surrounded by sharks. I basically learned everything I could from books and studies and, basically absorbed everything I could that was written about sharks. And I learned a lot about the issues and realized that we had to do more than just take people out to see sharks. Even though the population in Hawaii is quite healthy and everything is clean and looks beautiful and hunky-dory, it's not the case in the rest of the world. And even in Hawaii, the populations have been greatly decimated. So as I learned more, I also invested more time into going out to talk to kids and talk to legislators about issues. And of course, kids just, strictly talking about sharks and their lives. And eventually became involved in legislation that became the first shark fin ban or trade and sales ban of shark fins in Hawaii. It was the first in the world. Not just in the nation. Previously, shark fins had not been dealt with on a trade level. It was always more of a fisheries issue, and that just didn't seem to work. So that law then basically catapulted me into a whole new line of work. And when I was done in Hawaii, I started working with other groups such as Shark Savers, Wild Aid, Pew, and Shark Stewards, many other groups, Humane Society, and we collaborated on many more fin bans. And then in certain states, I wasn't even part. You know, now 12 states in the U.S. have done it, have followed it by emulating that law. And it just kind of took off on its own for a while, and then things slowed down. So sort of this one is important. Florida is important because it now has become the hub for the fin trade because mm-hmm. some of the other states shut down. So Florida suddenly is an important one. It's also one of the key states to influence what happens on the national level. Mm-hmm. So that's been sort of the last 10 years of evolution in this cause.
What do we know about maybe the political economy of the global shark trade, and particularly what makes shark fins such an attractive commodity?
Shark fins are highly priced. Pound for pound, it is one of the highest priced items that you can trade or smuggle. It's also nice because it's nice and simple. Nice, I say that, you know, for someone that wants to be in that business, sure. Because shark fins can be dried and they can be stored and transshipped and boxed and reboxed as many times as you want, because once they're dried, there's no hurry in getting them anywhere. They don't take up freezer space, so they don't have to be transported with other seafood. They can be stashed on ships, you know, anywhere outside in lockers, and they just don't take away from any other catch that has to be brought back. So it, for a long time, it was a great additional cash item for people, for fishermen that were out there fishing anyways, for tuna, for example, on long lines, because they could still get all the tuna while also getting shark fins. And this is really how shark finning, the act of finning, started, because they really didn't want to keep the bodies of sharks because that was considered junk meat. It wasn't as valuable as what really needed to go in the freezers. So instead of taking the whole shark, they just cut the fins off and threw the body back in, and then dried the fins on deck and then stashed them wherever they could. That was a great cash income, and great, you know, again, in the sense of for whoever was involved in it. And very often I was told that crew members who are, you know, barely make any money on these longliners, they were oftentimes paid in fins, where the captains would say, okay, instead of your pay, you get to take some fins back and then sell the fins. So it just became something that everybody was after. It seemed like an easy way to make additional money. And it's a billion dollar industry. It's fourth in, you know, the market of shark products globally is the fourth biggest illegal trade, that in terms of value, it's right after drugs, weapons, and I think human trafficking. Mm-hmm. So you can see it. That's the endangered, sorry, I have to correct myself. That's the endangered species products trades, which is ivory, rhino horn, and you know, products such as shark fins, is the fourth largest illicit trade in terms of income. So it's, you know, it's very hard to fight because everybody makes money with it. And when people make money, they will find lots of ways around laws and through loopholes. And it also becomes profitable, even if you get caught every once in a while, because the penalties are not that high. And, you know, it's very rare that fisheries cases get prosecuted because it's very hard to prove. So it's just it's a big mess.
And I'm wondering if there's any analogous international movement on shark fins.
Well, there's different protections through CITES, where certain shark species are put on the list of being threatened or endangered, and therefore the signatories to CITES agreements agree to protect those sharks. The problem is not every country is part of CITES. CITES is an agreement. You know, international agreements often are just that. They're not necessarily going to be upheld as law in a specific country. Oftentimes they can take years after the agreement is put in place to actually enforce it and enact. So, and also with sharks, when you're going after only certain species, once you cut fins off a shark, it's incredibly hard to tell what species it came from. So then enforcement gets real tricky again, because you have to do DNA testing in many cases, because so many fins look so much alike once they are all dried and shriveled up. So international agreements in this case, yes, international trade It's a great thought, but really it's individuals, nations, and individual states that have to put laws into place, just like they did with ivory. You know, it doesn't help us if there's an international agreement that, oh, ivory is bad. We don't like ivory. And the people that buy ivory, they shouldn't buy it. The consumer is a problem, but it's each individual country and state that should be putting laws into place saying, we don't want to participate in this. We don't allow it to come in. We don't want it to be sold locally. We don't like it to be produced here, because then it becomes enforceable.
Talk a little bit about why shark fins and sharks matter. What is the case in sort of the uniqueness of this particular issue?
Well, first of all, if sharks were only taken for subsistence fishing, it would be a completely different issue. The problem is the value of the fins. The reason so many sharks, it is said up to 70 million sharks end up in the shark fin trade. The reason so many sharks are taken is because of the fin. And when you're taking millions and millions of species, you know, especially with an animal that did not evolve to be hunted, sharks are predators, top predators. They did not evolve to be hunted by the thousands and millions. They have a very, you know, slow life history, much more like mammals. You cannot take them by the millions and think that that's sustainable. The reason we need sharks, and it's not, you know, it doesn't matter whether you like them or hate them, or even if they're your biggest phobia, sharks are a keystone species in the ocean, meaning they are vital for everything else to function correctly. Because when you're taking a top predator out, much like, you know, on land with wolves, you are affecting not only the next animal down the food chain, but what that animal would be eating, or how that affects, you know, coral reefs or grass on land. It would be grasslands. It is not only do they keep balance in the ocean between the different animals and species in the ecosystems, they're also making sure that the populations stay healthy through the pressure of being a predator. They take out the slow and the weak and the unhealthy, and it keeps populations thriving and strong. And that is a role that nobody can replace. We cannot create a little drone or app or any kind of technology that can help us take over that role in the ocean. We can't even get lower than 300 feet on a regular basis. So how are we thinking about controlling the balance of the oceans once it's been disturbed? And of course, sharks are not the only thing. Of course, I understand there's ocean acidity and dead zones and all sorts of problems. But with sharks, it's a problem we could actually solve, you know, at least to a large degree, not completely, because overfishing is still a problem. And shark meat is becoming more of a commodity due to overfishing of other fish. But it is something, especially with shark fins, I feel like this is something we could, with laws and with enforcement and with governments making decisions, we could solve that problem very quickly. People that are about to lose something like income from fins or sales from shark fin soup are a lot more invested in speaking up than people that are for something. And so the mixture of people that will show up to hearings or will actually call their representatives, if you're about to lose some income, every single person is going to pick up the phone or is going to show up and say, I don't want this, you know, and they'll be very angry and they'll be very, and to some degree, I understand it, you know, you're going to lose income. The percentage of who shows up and who is vocal and who puts pressure on legislators is not necessarily the percentage of people that are actually in support or against it. Mm-hmm. In some states on the West Coast, it was the stakeholders included a lot of Chinese restaurants that wanted to keep selling the soup. And of course, when you sell the trade of fin, when you block the trade of fins, you're blocking the sale of the soup, which, you know, the soup is the cause of all that evil in the first place. So you cannot keep selling the soup that is the driver for the product. So in those states, it was more on the side of the restaurants. There wasn't necessarily, like in Hawaii, there wasn't that much shark fishing going on in state waters anyway. And the locals do not hunt sharks to eat. So it was a different mix. It was mostly from the restaurant association and from individual restaurant owners In other states, it's more about fishing. In Florida, it's more about fishing. There are quite a few permitted, regulated shark fishing licenses, and they feel that they're regulated the most out of all fisheries. And they do indeed; they have a lot of regulations that they have to follow. Just because there are a lot of regulations doesn't mean it makes something sustainable. Just because you're tracking it doesn't mean it makes it sustainable. And just because you keep catching them also doesn't mean it's sustainable. So it's the problem comes in that the majority of Floridians probably do not want the fin trade in their state. They probably don't even know that it's happening. Most people I talk to, they are kind of shocked when they hear that we allow fins from other countries to come in and to be sold, and also that local fisheries contribute to the trade as well. Most people don't know that, and they're against it. And if you could take a census count, you know, it would be very obvious. But the way legislation works is whoever shows up gets to be heard. And especially in a topic where maybe the legislators themselves don't know that much about it and don't have an opinion.
Is there a movement towards a national ban?
Yes, there are two bills in Congress that are asking for a national ban, which would be great. It failed the last time. It ran out of time. It didn't fail. It wasn't outvoted or anything. It didn't die that way, but it just didn't make it through Congress because somebody kept it in one of the committees. They reintroduced it, and it's an important, it would be great if it happened on the national level. And state bans can only support that and make that happen more quickly and also solidify it, because you never know how legislation makes it out on the other end. There could be all sorts of amendments that sneak in, and then if you have a federal law and you have a state law in place, you have different ways of enforcing, and you can still, at some times, the state law can still be stronger than the national law. Having both, of course, is ideal. And that's what should happen.
So what's going on then in Florida with the legislature there and the possibility of successfully implementing a ban there?
There's a lot of support for it. I think it's going to take a little bit longer to... it's not going to happen... overnight. This is not going to just cruise right through. There is a lot of passion on both sides. It's not one of those issues that just gets neutrally discussed. I mean, there's a lot invested on both sides, and it's going to require a lot of education. Like I said, this is a topic that very few people are familiar with, and there's always the first 10 reactions. Well, why do we worry about it? Why is it important? Why do we care? Why do we care that the local fins, if they're being caught legally, why do we care that we sell these fins? They should. Why would we waste something that was already caught? So there's so many points that you have to get through to get someone on the level of understanding why this is important on an ethical level, on a national, international level, and just on the fact that really your constituents don't want this. The majority of your constituents don't want this. Unfortunately, getting them to speak up is a whole nother problem. There's many different ways to get involved, but the easiest and the most organized way is to kind of check in with us and on our website and, you know, see what's up next and where to check in and who to call. Of course, when it's state legislation, the most important ones are the people living in that state, and especially also businesses and people that contribute to the economy. It's very important that they check in. So again, dive industry, recreational fishermen, very important that they check in. They can directly check in with their representatives, their district, either the House representatives or the senators or both. If they don't know who they are, on our website, we have links to find who your representatives are, where their offices are, their phone numbers, etc. If you don't know, you know, there are certain districts that don't even have, they're not even on the coast. It may not be important to talk to your representative. Then we have guidance on who to contact and at what time. Timing is a little bit important. you know, when hearings come up, it becomes even more important for people to check in and to say, I support this. Showing up in person at a meeting, at a hearing, or at a, you know, even making an appointment with your representative is very effective. Basically, they need to hear from supporters that people really want this. And like I said, sharkallies.org, we have pretty much, we've built out a lot of different pages that give you all the information on the topics, on the different aspects of this cause, where we're at in the timeline, where to sign, even if you're from out of state, or, you know, there's places where you can sign, because we're making a point that this is not just a state issue. It is really something that affects us nationally. So the voices from people outside of state are not wasted. Also, you know, this will probably continue after Florida and move on to other states. So, you know, especially to the ones that don't have FIN legislation yet, it's good to be part of that network.
So a number of national laws, multilateral agreements, and global regulations do exist on shark protection in general and shark finning specifically. Many of these agreements require full utilization of the bodies of sharks that are harvested. None of the regional or international agreements can work by themselves. And that's where campaigns like Shark Allies come in. And that again returns us to the challenges of promoting international standards to save the planet and its creatures. We will continue to ask questions and hear from advocates about these challenges on this series. You can learn more about the series and support its continued production at actwithus.org, where you can also learn more about the Common Good Foundation, our partner and sponsor. For Solidarity House and Human Rights in a Burning World, I'm Matt Stannard.